Okay, so we're going to start with Tilim Kufya Dalad 114, and I posed a question, but also happy to hear other questions. We'll start with the question I posed, which is, when is this chapter about? When is the setting? So,
if we're describing Hayam Ra'ala Yanos, it means during Kriyat Yamsuf.
During Kriyat Yamsuf, 7 days after leaving Mitzrayim, and that's based on Pasuk Gimel, Hayam Ra'ala Yanos. Very nice, a very natural place to start. Okay.
We have Kriyat Zohar Gamayim Chalom Mishnah, Maman, Mamayim, which was when Moshe hit the rock.
Okay, right, so we have a couple of instances in Shmot and Bamidbar of water coming out of rocks. So there are certain references there. That's not exactly at the same time as Kriyat Yam Suf. That's already a little bit later.
And we're also talking about the Yarden this year. Well, that was 40 years later.
Right, so the Yarden being here at the same time as Yam Suf is a bit of a puzzle, right? If you want to say, this is the moment of Yetziat Mitzrayim, Bitzit Yisrael Mi Mitzrayim, which makes a lot of intuitive sense based on the very beginning of the Mizmor, then you have to explain why all these other events seem to be lumped in. Kriyat crossing of the Yarden, and Hayarden Yisov La'achor, Ha'uf Chiyat Zor Gamayim, whatever that is. Also, Harim Rakdu Ha'ilim, what mountains are there? And, you don't think of Yam Suf as a place that's, mountainous, and the mountains are dancing, they're moving. Those are some puzzles with, I think, that natural first reading. Any other ways to try to ground the Mizmor? Any other times you could think of?
After they were in, already crossed the Jordan in Israel, I mean, Yehudah, Ha'israch, Yehudah with Hadsho, I mean, that's, we're telling a little bit of the future, but I think it's, way after they crossed the Yom.
Yeah, this could be retrospective, right?
Yeah.
You already are in Israel. Hayta Yehuda leKodesho. Hashem is Kodesh. Makom Kodesho is the Mikdash. And so it could, and maybe the words Yehuda and Israel don't refer to the nation, but they refer to the land. You have Eretz Yehuda, Eretz Israel, the two kingdoms. So maybe we're talking about looking back on the whole, leaving Mitzrayim until you get to the land experience. And that's why you have Kriyat Yam Suf at the beginning, Kriyat Hayarden at the end, kind of the bookends of the experience. And anything that happened in the Midbar is fair game. You can talk about anything. You can talk about the water, you could talk about the mountains, Har Sinai, whatever you want to put into that picture, we could put in. That, I think, is another option for how we can think about the Mizmor. We'll see if either of those are going to, hold up better, or maybe there'll be different readings that we could use as we go through the chapter. Were there any other questions about the Perek before we get started? Because we'll see if we can address any as we go.
Maybe I've highlighted Yaakov.
Yeah.
Among the names that the Israelites have referred to, and Yaakov is usually associated with Eitz Hara, or is it not?
So that was right. I think one of our first chapters we did, we noticed the phrase Yaakov, and so some of the Midrashim note Yaakov did not have an easy time of it, right? So if we take that understanding of Yaakov, then how do we fit that here? And in some ways, it makes a lot of sense. Beit Yaakov me'am lo'ez. It's the nation of Yaakov from the foreign nation where they were slaves and they were subjugated for so long. I think that kind of dovetails nicely, but it's a nice note about the Yaakov piece, and we'll see if we can do a little more with it by the end.
I also notice the difference in the tenses for the Harim and the Dalet Harim Rokdu and the Vav Harim Tirkadu.
So that's interesting. Let's just hold that until we get to those psukim, because I think that might just go to sort of how you read the Mizmor on its surface level. But that's a great grammatical observation that I think fits that transition there. Okay, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to try reading the Mizmor, and because it's short, I want to try something, I think, a little different than what we normally do, which is not trying to unpack all the possibilities as we go through the Mizmor at once, but do a couple of readings. And each reading, try to use a different lens to maybe see different aspects of the Mizmor. So we're going to read through it a few times, but try to get different, aspects each time we go. So the first way we'll read it is in accordance with the first option. This is a Mizmor about Kriyat Yam Suf, fundamentally, and everything about it is going to fit into this moment. We just got freed from Mitzrayim, and that's what we are singing about. So, starting from the beginning, Bitzit Yisrael mi Mitzrayim, Beit Yaakov me'am lo'ez. When Yisrael left Mitzrayim, Beit Yaakov me'am lo'ez. Maybe we'll do it now. This phrase me'am lo'ez is kind of an odd phrase, right? There are lots of ways to talk about being in Mitzrayim. You talk about, you know, Beit Avadim is one way to think about it. We were slaves there. We talk about Mitzrayim as the geographical place. We talk about Goshen as the place where many of us actually lived. We can talk about Mitzrayim as like an evil nation, but a foreign nation is one that's a little bit interesting to unpack. So thinking about what we're saying about Mitzrayim when we say Am Loez is worth doing. But let's just finish the first stanza of the poem, and then we'll jump back to Am Loez. When that happened, Hayta Yehuda leKodesho, Yisrael Mamshalotav. Yehuda became his Kodesh, in this reading, if we're talking about Kriyat Yam Suf, we don't mean the land, Yehuda and Israel, we mean the people. The people are in some ways associated with Hashem now. Hashem took us out, now we are his chosen people. And so up to the Am Loez piece, because there are a couple of nice comments we see in some of the commentaries about that, I think are just insightful for thinking about Mitzrayim. We'll jump past this midrash at the beginning. It's an interesting midrash. We may come to it a little bit later. And up to source number 3 with Rav Hirsch's commentary. The thought of verse 1 is, our fathers had passed the supreme test. That is, they were able to go forth from Mitzrayim as Yisrael. They left Am Loez as Beit Yaakov. Meaning the foreignness is exactly part of the trouble of being in Mitzrayim, that we're in a foreign, corrosive kind of culture. Even though they had dwelt in a state that worshipped only the power of nature and men, they had lost nothing of their own concept of God, who had taught them to render homage to his dominion alone. According to a statement in the Midrash, the house of Jacob was even as a child encompassed in its mother's womb, meaning it was completely surrounded and completely almost absorbed in that experience. So that what had to be done was to lift out goy mikarev goy. It's a reference to a pasuk in the book of Devarim. So Am Loez, for our first, is emphasizing very extremely this foreignness and the fact that they are not only foreign in language, la'az is often a word that we associate with a foreign tongue, but even a foreign set of ideas. That's one the Targum, the Aramaic translation, picks up on with a explicitly negative connotation. When Israel left Egypt, Beit Yaakov, Me ame barbarai, barbarians. Yeah, it's the Aramaic, the Targum sometimes borrows words from Greek. I think barbarim is a Greek word that became incorporated into the Targum. These are barbarians, and I think the word barbarian, even in Greek, has the same connotation. Not only like non-Greeks or non-Romans, but even, you know, or maybe by virtue of the fact that they're not of us, they're also worse. And they're also corrupt and uncivilized in whatever way they might mean. And I think here we mean maybe a similar kind of connotation. Which I think is an interesting thing to notice. Malbim tries to make the claim that the two phrases of the Pasuk are actually dealing with two different populations. There's Beit Yaakov, which we picking up on why Yaakov specifically is mentioned. That means the average, the everyman, right? Yaakov is a less refined Yisrael. He hasn't fully grown into that role of Yisrael. That's why Yaakov is his name at first. So Beit Yaakov was Me'am Loez. They were really among the people. They were interwoven and mingling with them. And Yisrael, on the other hand, was this higher stage, right? The Midrash, and I think the Midrash even on this Parak of Tehillim picks up on this. Says, why were Bnei Yisrael redeemed from Egypt? Because they didn't intermingle. They didn't change their language. They didn't change their names, their dress. There's a fourth one. What's the fourth one in that Midrash? It's escaping me at the moment. So the Yisrael were the ones who were not intermingling with the Am Loez. So I write language, dress, names, and I think there's a fourth.
They lived together, away from the others.
I think in substance, that's the idea we're getting at. They retained a certain distance. I don't think that's specifically the example the Midrash mentions. But in any case, right, that theme is being emphasized at the beginning of this Mizmor, this difference of the Jewish people. And by virtue of this distance, they're able to be redeemed and then become even more distinct as God's chosen nation. Okay. I'm circling back to the Mizmor. Pasuk Gimel and Dalet. Hayamra Avayanos. The sea saw and fled. That's Kriyat Yam Suf. It's a nice poetic description of the sea fleeing. V'hayarden Yisov L'Achor. So why are we talking about the Yarden? Rashi says in source number 6, it's because at the time of Yetziat Mitzrayim, it's not only the water in this part of the world that split, but as the Midrash describes, as Rashi describes, the water everywhere splits. So while it's happening here, it's also happening at the Yarden at the same time. And so, right, so this might be the source for that Midrashic idea of the water all across the world is splitting. And even more broadly, there's like a worldwide thing happening Haharim rakducha elim gevaot kibnei tzaon. Technically, there's not water, but it is parts of the earth reacting to this miraculous experience, right? Kriyat Yamsuf is described, you know, by Chazal and elsewhere in Tanakh as this incredible revelation of God. Right? They say that even a maidservant in Kriyat Yamsuf had greater nevuahs than some of the greatest neviim. It's a real moment of revelation, and this is how it's being manifest in all these reactions of the natural world. The sea is reacting, the land is reacting, the whole world is reacting in a certain way. Now, Psukim Hey and Vav, and getting to that grammatical point, why the change in tense, seems to be because we're changing from a statement to a question. The statement is, here's what the seas were doing, here's what the mountains were doing. Now we're asking, why were you doing that? Malacha hayam kitanus. Why have you chosen to run away? Yarden tisov lachor. The Jordan, that you have turned back. Haharim tirkaducha elim givaot kivnei tzon, that the hills and the mountains and the hills are bounding like rams, like sheep. Why are you doing that? So we're asking a question, and not making a statement here. So the, you know, vayanos, yisov la'achor, those are objective third-person statements. The second person, you, why are you reacting this way, is psukim hey and vav. And, you know, the language is obviously very parallel from gimel, dalet, and hey to vav. They're definitely, you know, a center of the mizmor. You might say the beginning of the mizmor is explaining what's happening, and the end of the mizmor is explaining why it's happening. So the beginning, here's the description. Hashem took us out of Egypt, we've become this nation, the earth is reacting. Why is that happening? Hey and vav. Because Zion and Chet, milifnei Adon Chuli Aret, from before the master or a master, Chuli Aret. Well, most commentaries understand this to mean like shake or tremble. So they're all reacting to God, milifnei Aloka Yaakov, before the God of Yaakov. And what did this God do? Ha'ofchi Hatzur Agam Mayim, who turned the rock into a pool of water, an agam. Chalamish lemayin omayim, a small flint into a spring of water. And that seems to be almost like an inversion of Kriyat Yamsuf. In Kriyat Yamsuf, we took water and we turned it into dry land. And you should know, in describing the, you know, God's appearance in this situation, that it goes both ways. God could turn the water into land, and God could also turn the land back into water, so to speak. And that's the example here of turning the rock into water, as described in the Midbar. Right, so on one level, our mizmor is a mizmor about Kriyat Yamsuf and the, you know, God's complete revelation as part of Kriyat Yamsuf, and God's complete control over nature that was manifest there. And Betzei Yisrael Mimitzrayim, the first two psukim, are mostly just setting the stage. You should know that we're talking about this event that happened right as Bnei Yisrael were becoming God's nation and being taken out of Mitzrayim. But really, the focus is Kriyat Yamsuf, the specific moment and the specific miracles associated with it. That's the mental image of this mizmor, and that works very well. That's how Chazal, for the most part, tend to read this. It's even just, there's a midrash that I think many of us know, we've heard it before, I think it's grounded here in these psukim. It could have been Daf Yomi also recently. I don't know if anyone does Daf Yomi here, but the Gemara in Sota uses the pasuk here, Haita Yehuda Lekacho, why Yehuda specifically? Because at Kriyat Yamsuf, Yehuda really stepped up. Right? Who's the hero of Kriyat Yamsuf? It's Nachshon ben Aminadav. He jumps into the ocean first. All the tribes are debating who's going to go first. Nachshon jumps right in. And with that, he earns Yehuda a prized spot in the moment of Kriyat Yamsuf, and in turn, where, you know, the Mikdash is going to end up being associated with Yehuda. So that's how Chazal kind of fit this all into the lens of Kriyat Yamsuf. That's one way to read this mizmor. Now, the weaknesses of this reading are, first of all, you know, we have to kind of shove other historical events into the lens of Kriyat Yamsuf. So the Yarden isn't really the Yarden, or crossing the Jordan in Yehoshua, it's just another aspect of Kriyat Yamsuf. The mountains, whatever's happening with the mountains, just another part of Kriyat Yamsuf. Even the rock and the rock turning into water, also just another angle or lens on Kriyat Yamsuf. And it involves kind of collapsing a lot of historical events into one moment. We could offer or suggest and do another reading of the mizmor where we read it a little bit more broadly. I think suggesting that we're looking back on the whole experience from Tzeit Yisrael Mitzrayim until entering the land and looking back on the whole scope of that. And maybe in that way, trying for a reading that keeps all the historical moments in their historical context. So let's see if we could try doing that. So Tzeit Yisrael Mitzrayim is the beginning of our story. We start in our time leaving Egypt. I think now I'll just look at this midrash. Just because this is a great midrash to see. It's the midrash on our parak of Tehillim in source number 2. B'zei Yisrael mi Mitzrayim, Zehu sha'amar ha'katuv, Samach Yisrael b'zeitam. How were the Egyptians feeling when they left? Well, they were feeling quite good when we left. Ki nafal pachdam aleihem. Because the pasuk in Tehillim, this is a few prakim earlier in Kuf Hei, because the fear of the Jewish people had fallen on the Egyptians. Meaning by the time we actually left Mitzrayim, we weren't the only ones happy about that. The Egyptians were also equally happy about this. Amar Rabbi Brecha, he gives you a mashal to explain why. Mashal ba'al basar, shaya rochev ala chamor. The mashal for a large person, a ba'al basar is a nice kind of euphemism, a heavy-set fellow who's riding on a donkey. Ze omer matai ered min ha'chamor. He's thinking, when am I going to be able to get off this chamor already? I'm not comfortable here. Ze omer matai ered ze me'alai. And the donkey is thinking, when's this guy going to get off of me? Higiyaz man she'ered. And Rabbi Brechia says, "Ei yodeya mi samach biyoter." When the guy finally gets off, I don't know who's happier. Right? The guy's off; he's more comfortable, and the donkey's also happy. And I think in the nimshal, you have to imagine. So the donkey here, who's the donkey? The donkey in Mitzrayim. I would have thought the opposite. I think in the slavery in Mitzrayim, we are the donkey, right? Like from an outsider's perspective, we're the ones who are doing the work, who are carrying the load, and Mitzrayim is the master kind of on top and controlling us. But even though we're the ones who are kind of being weighed upon by this Baal Basar, it's not like he's having a great time either. You know, the donkey's struggling, it's uncomfortable, and as we know from the stories of Yetziat Mitzrayim, at some point start shaking the guy off, or, you know, pushing back, Hashem starts pushing back. And it ends up being an unpleasant experience for them also. So when they get off, they let us go, so to speak. But they're also the ones who are a little bit relieved. That's my intuition, that the donkey is us, you know, apparently the one suffering more, but really maybe not. And then, Kevan Shera'a David, Heyach Hayu Smichem B'Tzeitam Mimitzrayim, then Hidchim Mekales Al Yetziat Mitzrayim. Ve'omer B'Tzeit Yisrael Mimitzrayim. This mizmor was written by David to celebrate Yetziat Mitzrayim, because he saw how happy even the Egyptians were when we left, and so decided it was appropriate to give praise here. I think the line, Hitchel Makalis Al Yetziat Mitzrayim, tries to generalize a little bit. We're not focusing so narrowly on the one moment of Kriyat Yam Suf, we're reading about kind of the whole experience that's happening. So we left Mitzrayim, we became God's nation. What would that be referring to? Haita Yehuda Lekadcho Yisrael Mam Shalotav.
Left as an
So it could be the moment of Yetziat Mitzrayim. We became God's nation. We became his chosen people. You might also suggest, this is a little foreshadowing for a third reading, maybe we're referring not to Yetziat Mitzrayim, but to Matan Torah. That's when we became an Am Kodesh. You know, holiness was involved at that point. That's when, you know, the sealing the deal and really becoming God's nation happened in full force. Part of that experience is Hayam Ra'avayanos, that in the beginning we saw the sea, and the sea fled. And then on the other end, Hayardeni Sov La'achor. The river also kind of turned back and led us through the land. So entering the desert and then exiting the desert are both being reflected here. And in the middle of the desert, Heharim Rakdu Ha'elin Giva'ot Kibnei Tzon. So I don't know that we have Giva'ot necessarily, but we have a Har. We have multiple Harim, actually. Right? The most prominent would be Har Sinai, Mamad Har Sinai. You have Hor HaHar as well. There are other events that happen at Harim in the Midbar. I think Malbim points to Hor HaHar. You don't usually think of that mountain. That's where Aaron dies. It's not usually sort of prominent mountain when you think about the process of entering the land. But maybe we're referencing Har Sinai, that the Gemara and Masechet Pesachim in source number 7, in explaining like why we read this Halal at all, says it's because of all these monumental historical events. It just starts listing them. Yetziat Mitzrayim, right where we began. Kriyat Yam Suf, as we continue. Umatan Torah is the third one, and that's the last line of this Gemara. Umatan Torah, Dichtiv Heharim Rakdu Ha'elim. The mountains skip like rams, and some of the commentaries there point to other psukim in Tehillim that describe the mountains jumping in some way. Malacha Hayam Kitanuz Hayarein Tisov La'achor Heharim Rakdu Ha'elim Givaut Kibnitzon. Those psukim don't always dramatically more meaningful. It's kind of repeating the same idea, but in question form. They invite a response. And milvei Adon chuli aretz milvnei Eloka Yaakov. They did this because of God. And we'll throw in another historical moment here. So God did these miraculous, wondrous events, created Yamsuf, crossing the Yarden, Matan Torah, all these big events. And this maybe feels like a smaller thing, he also sustained us in the desert. So we have, you know, the beginning, we have the end, we have the middle where Hashem nourishes and sustains us. He gave us water, and we're meant to be thinking of the man also. We're meant to be thinking of our nourishment in the Midbar. The end of the Shir Shal Yom for Thursdays, we have Mitzur Devash Aspiaka. It's maybe other references to being nourished from some of these rocks. We mentioned Sur, we mentioned Chalamish. And that's another way to go. It becomes a mizmor of praise or gratitude for Yetzias Mitzrayim. Looking back now from our position in Eretz Yisrael, in Eretz Yehuda, maybe even in a place where we already have the Mikdash, but we look back at all of the wonders and all of the support we had in the Midbar as we went. I think that works as another possible reading. You know, so now if you're imagining the image in your mind of what this mizmor is about, it's not the one moment of create. So if it's kind of trying to encapsulate in very tight formation the entire Midbar experience. And it becomes like many other chapters in Tehillim, where we focus on the Midbar experience as a whole and kind of summarize the entire thing. There are other chapters that work in a kind of similar way. In the context of this reading, so I already biased the interpretation here. I said that it's gratitude looking back at, you know, how much we appreciate all of the kindness and the all Hashem did for us in the Midbar. But there's actually another way to go in thinking about the meaning of the Midbar experience, not as a manifestation of kindness and that we're being grateful for that, but as a manifestation of Hashem's might and power. And it starts with the question, which is something I haven't pointed out in other Mizmorim, but I'll point out here, right? There are certain words that you expect that are very characteristic of other chapters of Tehillim. When I search, one of the first things I do in preparing a chapter is I use this tool, it's called Tanakh Lab, that does a lot of like literal linguistic textual analysis of the Mizmor. It tells me how many times each word appears in the chapter, whether that's like a statistically significant number of appearances for a particular word or phrase, if there are parallels to other parts of Tanakh where the same phrases appear. And one thing that I noticed most weeks, and it's so common that I haven't even been flagging it, is that Shem Hashem appears a lot of times. In most chapters, right, we're singing to Hashem, we're praising Hashem, of course Yudkei Vavkei, of course Elohim is going to appear many times. Here it appears once, and it doesn't even appear at the beginning, it really appears at the end. So it says, B'tzei Yisrael Mitzrayim, when we left Egypt. It's not when Hashem took us out of Egypt, it's when we left Egypt. Then we became Kodesho, but we don't say who's Kodesh, you know, who's holy person, who's dominion. We don't talk about that. And we talked, and the sea and the mountains are all reacting to this. And we have to ask them, like, who are you reacting to? Because in the mental image of this chapter, Hashem hasn't actually appeared yet. So we have to wonder, what are you doing? We don't know what the sea is doing. We don't know what the mountains are reacting to. It's only by Pasuk Zion when Hashem finally appears. We're almost like wondering what's causing all of this. And all of a sudden, b'vnei Adon Chuli Aretz. The Adon appears, the master of the earth, the master of the whole earth. It's the Aretz, not just the seas, not just the mountains. The master of the world. Milifnei Aloka Yaakov, the God of Yaakov appears. And that's when, oh, we understand now. This is all a mizmor about Hashem, who's causing all of these things. This is how, what's his name? Aryeh Leib Strauss, he was a 20th century scholar of Tanakh who tries to read this mizmor as kind of like an ascending spiral. So we start at the beginning, we talk about leaving Mitzrayim. Then we talk about all these wondrous events in nature, and we can't understand those events. And all of a sudden we introduce God in at the end, and that explains both the historical events and these natural consequences. And one more piece of evidence that Strauss cites to justify this reading is that as you go through the Mizmor, everything but Hashem shrinks. What do I mean? Let's look at the images. Starting from Pasuk Gimel is the easiest place to start. Hayam ra'avayanos. The sea saw and it fled. And the Yarden, a little smaller, Yisov la'achor, turned around. It's not fleeing, it's a smaller body of water. Harim rakduche elim, the mountains, they jump, they bound like rams. And the Gva'ot, the hills, kivnei tzon, like little sheep. What's changing, right? Unlike, you know, most parallelism, I shouldn't say most, but a lot of parallelism and imagery we see in Tanakh intensifies as you go. You start small, you get bigger. You start from a small number, you end with a larger one. Here, we're shrinking all the images. What's causing all the images to shrink? Well, we start out without Hashem. Without Hashem, all of these natural forces have space, so to speak. They could be hills, they could be seas, they get to do things. But as Hashem kind of creeps in towards the picture, he's not even here yet, and all the natural forces are giving way a little bit. They're making room for Milifnei Adon Chuli Aretz. The whole earth is now Hashem's place, his plaything, where he's running the show. So all the forces of nature are kind of stepping away. And even at the last psukim, you get the same thing. The tzur becomes an agam mayim, a whole pool. Chalamish lemayno mayim, a spring. I'm arguing here. I need to demonstrate that with more scientific evidence. But an agam feels like a bigger body of water. And a spring is a little, wherever water comes from. It could be a spring, however big it is, it could qualify. An agam feels like it would need to be a bigger collection of water. And so, you know, in the second reading, we could talk about this description of the whole Yetziat Mitzrayim experience, the whole description of God's role in that experience, both from the lens of gratitude. We're looking back, Hashem has nurtured us and sustained us with the Agam Mayim, the Mayan Mayim, and we're interested in that aspect of Hashem's role in that experience. And we could also, along the lines of Strauss, suggest that it's part of recognizing Hashem's power in manufacturing and running the Yetziat Mitzrayim experience. Don't think the Jewish people left on their own, even though it might look that way if you're not paying too much attention. But say Yisrael Mitzrayim without Hashem. Really, we see Hashem's fingerprints, you know, start to appear until Hashem himself appears and shows, I'm running this process. And the more overt miracles that you can invoke, like turning a rock into water, which is a complete transformation from one of the hardest forces in the natural world to one of the softest and most malleable, and with Hashem's integration into the world, we get a new lens on that experience. It's a great historical moment, and it's one that cements a connection with Hashem, and Hashem's power and chesed both being manifest in the story as it appears. And that, I think, offers a possible second reading. It's about the whole Midbar experience, and with these emphases on Hashem's role and control over that experience, and his graciousness and goodness in that experience in supporting us and sustaining us. I think we have time for one more. So let's see if we can do a third. And this one relies a little bit less on sort of traditional commentaries, maybe a little bit more on some of the allusions in our chapter. And in particular, it involves focusing on a pasuk that mostly we've been overlooking. We've been explaining Yetzei Yisrael Mitzrayim, we've been explaining the role of the rivers and the mountains. But pasuk bet is one we've really downplayed in the earlier readings. It's part of the setting. We just are kind of grounding ourselves in time. Hayta Yehuda leKodesho. Yehuda became his Kodesh, his holy nation, or his holy land, his sanctuary. Yisrael mamshalotav, and Yisrael became his dominion. Well, we've seen language like that before. It's much earlier in the Torah, in Sefer Shemot. We could jump to, let's jump to source number 11 for this. And there's some, let's start with source number 11. This is Shmot Perek Yitchet. This is in Parshat Yitro, in the lead up to Har Sinai. B'chodesh Hashlishi, in the third month, Litzeit Bnei Yisrael Me'eret Mitzrayim. Litzeit Yisrael Mitzrayim. They arrive at Midbar Sinai, and they set up camp there. Moshe goes up. Let's go to the end of Pasuk Gimel. What does Hashem say? Moshe Allah Elokim Ba'yikra Elav Hashem Minahar. Hashem told him, Ko Tamar Levet Yaakov. V'tagid l'bnei Yisrael, tell Beit Yaakov, tell Yisrael, who just came out of Mitzrayim, Atem re'item asher asiti b'Mitzrayim, you've seen all of my miracles, everything I did in Mitzrayim, v'asatchem al kanfei nesharim v'aviatchem elai, and I've carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to me, v'ata im shamo tishmu b'koli u'shmartem et briti, v'item li sigula mikol ha'amim ki li kol ha'aretz, if you listen to my word and make my brit and become my chosen nation, Kili Kol Haaretz, Mifei Don Chuli Aretz, the master of the world. Then, Atem Tiyuli Mamlachat Kohanim V'goy Kadosh. You will be a Kadosh. You will be my Mamlacha, my Memshala, those are often synonyms, in this world. And then, let's talk about what you're going to tell the people and how the revelation is going to go. And so just those first two psukim in B'tei Yisrael mi Mitzrayim, Beit Yaakov, mi Amloes, Haita Yehuda leKodesho, Yisrael mam Shelotav, we see a lot of reference here connecting us to Har Sinai. That's an interesting way to start. So let's say we started zoned in on Kriyat Yamsuf, then we zoomed out to maybe the entire Midbar. What happens if we zoom in again just to Revelation, just to Har Sinai? So there are some things we have to explain. Like, what's going on with the Yam, the Yarden? You know, why are they reacting as part of us becoming Hashem's chosen nation? That's a little bit odd. Ha'arim terkidu ha'ilim makes a little bit more sense. We understand what the mountain might be that we're talking about. I think, just in the interest of time, let's look at how Professor Weiss, Mayor Weiss, in source number 9, tries to read this mizmor. Matzanu shetofaot hateva ba'u kitkuva lema'ora ha'histori meta-histori. These natural occurrences are responding to this massive historical event. Not the historical event of Kriyat Yamsuf, but the historical event of there being a chosen nation by God, and God choosing us to be his nation. So they're not responding, they're not the miracles themselves that are being responded to, but Hashem's changing something in the world that's causing all of these other consequences. Kol ha-tofaot ha-ele mitzayinot shinui makom b'tzurot shonot she'atzad ha-shaveh she-bahen hi ha-mehirut ha-pit-omiyut. They're all sudden changes in the world. The water's flowing one way, it turns the other way. The sea is here, the sea's run away. The mountains are bounding in the air. And what's the idea? Just the idea is that they're all obstacles to that destiny that God is trying to cause in the world. This is where the ambiguity between Yehuda and Israel as nation and as place becomes really important. It's both. It's that we become the chosen people who are going to go to the chosen place and be the nation there. And so the Yarden is an obstacle on our way to that destination. So it's got to go. The Yamsuf, we have to cross, so it'll get out of the way for us. Even the mountains, you know, you have Midrashim that describe how the land that Bnei Yisrael were walking on was leveled by the clouds so that we could walk a smooth, direct path to Eretz Yisrael. That gets messed up a little bit with Chet HaMeraglim, and we end up having a longer journey in the Midbar, but the plan is to get directly into the land, and all of these natural obstacles are getting out of the way. And they're supporting God's plan for this new creation, which is the creation of the nation in the land that God's trying to create. Mishat Bereshit, let's go to the second paragraph. Maaseh Bereshit, that's a typo, I apologize. It should really be Maaseh Bereshit. The work of creation, heim shutfav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'maaseh ha'acharit. The work of Bereshit at the beginning is joining together with this latest creation, Maaseh ha'acharit. Ha'olam ha'fizi, the physical world, oseh et shelo, the physical world is falling in line, doing what it's supposed to do, in order for the metaphysical world to manifest the way it's meant to, in order for the nation that's meant to enter the land and become God's holy nation is able to do so. She's picking up on that same language that's so significant in the beginning of the mizmor. And so, why do the sea and the hills react the way they do? If, you know, to answer the subtitle of our shir, why do the mountains dance? They're not really dancing. They're really jumping out of the way so that we're able to enter the land in our intended way. And then what we have to explain, the last thing to fill in, is how to read the end of the mizmor. So, milifnei adon chuli aretz, before the master of the earth. Mayor Weiss incidentally reads chuli not as shake and tremble, but as in the sense of like, of Yecholel, in the sense of conversation of creation, which exists elsewhere in Tehillim as well. But this God, who was involved in creation, is now involved in almost a new kind of creation, the creation of a nation, at least a supplement of creation. You have some creation imagery in Kriyat Yamsuf as well, I think, for this reason. Where even this, like, most natural base identity of a thing, a rock, could become water because the physical world is subservient to God's purpose for the world. So if the physical world is a rock, but God needs it to be water right now because that's what his nation needs in order to fulfill their destiny, well, it's going to turn into water. He's going to make sure that happens. And that transformation and subjugation of the physical world for the metaphysical world is how the idea of Vitei Yisrael Mimitrayim is being actualized, right? The physical world is kind of falling into line because that's exactly what it needs to do. I think we're one supplemental piece that I like a lot, and this goes to some of the psukim that we're not going to read, but people should feel free to take a look. Some of the psukim here on the last page in Yeshayahu or in Tehillim, some of the same language that we see being used in our Mizmor appears in them as well. So in source number 12, we describe God as the one who provides water for the thirsty. They're thirsty, their tongue is dry, so I will open up all these sources of water. Asim midbar at the very end, agamayim veret tzia lemutzimayim. I will turn the midbar, the desert, into the source of water. The agamayim, just like the rock turns into water when Hashem needs it to, so too these. In Yud Gimel also, another prophecy from Yeshayahu, some of these appear in contexts of Eretz Yisrael and Am Yisrael's national contexts, namely the context of causing the land to sprout again when the people return to it, causing the land to be fit again for Bnei Yisrael to come live there after, these are, you know, from Galut Bavel, so after that first exile, they're able to return to the land. And I think if we think of the Mizmor as describing the natural world falling into line so that our the natural world falling into line, so our national world can be actualized, and we have historical precedent for that in Yetziyah Mitzrayim. And then in Hashem's rebirth of the land the first time, for us to return to the land and serve Him there. And we talked about this a few weeks ago, and now again, we're able to see the land being transformed so that our national destiny can be achieved. And we see some of that being a manifestation of a lot of what we see in the Nevi'im as well. Okay, so just to wrap up, we saw maybe three ways to see the events of the Mizmor, three locations in time to find it. The first was a reflection on Kriyat Yamsuf. The Midrashim play this idea up, the absolute like revelation of God that was associated with Kriyat Yamsuf and that caused all of these massive miracles, completely transforming creation, not only in this one ocean, but all over the natural world. A second reading that's looking back on the entire Midbar experience, either from a place of gratitude or from a place of God's wonder, again, God's revelation, but not in the one a local moment, but throughout the entire experience, as it was manifest, and how Hashem appears and all of natural forces shrink before Him. And finally, a third way to look at it was as the natural world subjugating itself for God's mission. So you ask the rivers, the mountains, why are they jumping, why are they moving out of the way? And it's interesting, by the way, they don't actually respond, right? We ask the question, and then, we know the reason why. We know that Hashem is pushing them out of the way so that our mission can go through exactly the way it is meant to. And Hashem's role there is guiding us to a national destiny as a Mamlechet Kohanim and Goy Kadosh. Okay, that's it for today.